Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across the nation. I'm delighted to have you with me. I hope it is nicer weather where you are than where I am, where it is raining. And then on Thursday, it's going to be cool. And then it's going to be hot and muggy again. It just can't make up its mind. It's that time of year. All right. We got to begin with Joe Biden's very bad, no good, awful, terrible week. I have laughed since I saw this. The Associated Press decided to handle Joe Biden's very bad week with the passive voice. This is the actual tweet from Saturday. Within an hour, President Biden was dealt a trio of setbacks. The Pentagon said a drone strike that killed 10 Afghans was a mistake. A panel rejected COVID booster shots for all Americans, and France recalled its U.S. ambassador. Notice there's no mention of the border in that tweet. The passive voice for a passive president. He was dealt a series of setbacks. Who actually dealt them? Now, is it the Associated Press in the spirit of you smelt it, you dealt it? Nope. Joe Biden did it to himself. Biden did this to himself. Now, if you haven't heard, and you probably have, but if you haven't, the Pentagon announced that the drone strike in Afghanistan, as I've been telling you for over a week now, turns out the drone strike really did hit an Afghan national, killing him and his children. And he was not a terrorist after all, but an aid worker for a U.S. nonprofit trying to help people get out of the country. Maybe that's why. It's only a matter of time before the conspiracy theorists say, maybe that's why Biden took him out. Didn't want any more exposure on the Afghan side to people not being able to get out of the country. They thought he was a terrorist because they saw him loading containers into the back of his car that from the aerial surveillance appeared it could be explosives. It turns out it was jugs of water taking home to the family. They made sure the Pentagon and the White House, made sure Joe Biden was at the beach out of sight before announcing this. He went on another vacation. Now, the real key takeaway here that you need to understand that the media has moved rapidly beyond is our over-the-horizon capabilities aren't as capable as claimed. It's more incapable than capable. Biden said we could get everybody out of Afghanistan, leave the country, hand it back to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda because we had over-the-horizon capabilities that would make it very difficult for them to get rid of or to plan terrorist attacks. And it turns out, actually, your over-the-horizon capabilities aren't that good, Joe. Now, it's not just that. Let's deal with the other issue as well. COVID. Joe Biden said if you elect him as president, we would take care of COVID. We would annihilate COVID. We would get rid of it. And it's on the rise. Now, they've rushed out a series of polls that show vaccine mandates and masks are actually majority support in this country. But if you actually ask them about government mandated masks, it doesn't actually come out with majority support. It's actually tied about 45-45 as to whether or not a government mandate for masks is a good idea. But part of the problem here, and one of the reasons that they're having to rapidly move, is because in this country, the media is so obsessed with red states and Republicans, they have ignored that more and more it is becoming apparent that it is cyclical and based on the weather patterns as to how COVID spreads. When it's very hot in the summer and people are outside in the north, but inside in the south, it spreads in the south. As they head inside for the wintertime, it starts to go up in the north and decrease in the south. Where are the most rapid rates of decrease in the nation? Number one, Puerto Rico, down 50%. Number two, Georgia, down 36%. Number three, Arkansas, down 35%. Number four, Hawaii, down 33%. Number five, Mississippi, down 32%. Number six, Florida, down 29%. Number seven, California, down 26%. Number eight, Alabama, down 26%. Number nine, Louisiana, down 24%. Number 10, Oklahoma, down 20%. And then you have Arizona, New Mexico, Texas. What? What do all those states have in common? They're hot southern states where the weather's cooling off and people are going outside. Now, let me give you the list of the top 10 states. Number one, Montana, up 55%. Way to go, Charlie. My producer's from Montana. Number two, Vermont, 49%, where 80% of the people are vaccinated. Number three, Iowa, 48%. Number four, New Hampshire, 47%. Number five, Washington, D.C., 38%. Number six, Minnesota, 35%. Number seven, Alaska, 33%. Number eight, Michigan, 32%. Number nine, Pennsylvania, 31%. Number 10, Wisconsin, 29%. All northern states that are cooling off and people are going inside. And by the way, I want to point something out here. I didn't know. This was not a setup. You know, in law school, you learn never ask a question unless you already know the answer. In radio, you could say you should never do something like this unless you already know the answer. I didn't know. I didn't look ahead of time. I didn't go pull up the list and say, hey, I can make this point. I just knew enough about the virus to know that if I went and looked at this list at the New York Times, you can go see it yourself. Go to nytimes.com. They got it on the front page. You click the link. You can sort it by 14-day change. I just happen to know that, states where it's cooling off and people are going inside, it's going up. And states where it's cooling off, people are going outside, the virus is going down. And this is remarkable. It's actually 69% of the people in Vermont are vaccinated. And the 14-day change is up 49%, second highest in the nation, behind Montana, which is 48% vaccinated. And get this, ahead of Iowa, where only 53% are vaccinated. Vermont, with 69% of people fully vaccinated, has a higher 14-day percentage change than Alaska, where only 49% of people are vaccinated. And in Mississippi, only 42% of people are vaccinated, and they've seen a 32% decline in the 14-day moving average. In fact, Tate Reeves, the governor of Mississippi, was on, I think it was CNN this week. And they were attacking him for the rate of vaccination in Mississippi and not wanting to do government mandates. Pay no attention to the fact that in Mississippi, though only 42% of people are fully vaccinated, they've had a 32% decline in COVID cases over the last 2 weeks. In Georgia, only 44% of people are fully vaccinated. They've had a 36% decline, second highest decrease in the nation, behind Puerto Rico with a 64% full vaccination rate. And yet, the Biden administration is insistent it has to do with policy prescriptions, and his policy prescriptions are failing. In fact, Biden insisted that everyone in the country was going to have a booster shot if they wanted it, and the FDA has come out and said, nah, we're going to take a pass on that. Biden couldn't bully them into a full booster. Now, what does the FDA say? The FDA says that the data is, there isn't enough data yet to say go for it. And so as a result, they're going to say older people and people with compromised immune systems get a booster of the Pfizer shot. I'll tell you, my wife's doctor, she had the Moderna shot. Let her get a booster of the Moderna shot, even though the data is not there yet on Moderna. In fact, the Moderna data suggests it is better than all the others, hands down. The Moderna data apparently put so many antibodies into your system that it is highly effective against the Delta variant and everything else. Thankfully, I got the Moderna as well. I may get a booster. By the way, yeah, you will know, note my wife, she had the booster. She had a bad reaction with the second shot. She did not really have a bad reaction with the booster. She was tired for a day, but that was it. Joe Biden's had a terrible week. On top of all of that, there are now about 15,000 people under that bridge in Texas. The Homeland Security has finally had to step in and start straight deporting people back to Haiti. Apparently, I found out where the Haitians came from. Most of the Haitians who are under the bridge in Texas are people who left Haiti and went to South America for the Olympics in Brazil. And they've hung out in South America for a while. They can't get back to Haiti. They can't find jobs in South America. And they've been moving north. Now, some of the people have fled Haiti and they went into Mexico and decided to make their way north. But a lot of them are Haitian migrant workers who can't find jobs in South America. They're hearing about low wage and low skilled laborers in this country not showing up for jobs, and they're perfectly happy to come up here and flip burgers at McDonald's if nobody else will. But that's a huge humanitarian crisis at the border. The mayor of Del Rio, Texas, Mayor Lorenzo, it was on national television this weekend.
Mayor, so I know that you, as you said, you talked to Secretary Mayorkas, but I also, you have been trying to tag President Biden on yeah. Twitter. Have you heard from him or his office or Vice President's office?
Not directly from the Vice President or President's office, unfortunately. I have been just trying to spread the dire situation here. Right now, because of the conversation I had with Secretary Mayorkas, I now feel that his office is fully aware of the situation here happening in real time.
And would you want them to visit here?
I know that I was speaking about visiting. I think the public needs to know about the transparency, what's happening in the city of Del Rio, Texas. And I just feel that the White House definitely needs to address the situation in real time and let the American people know what's happening at their southern border.
Let people know what's happening at the southern border, whether they go or not. At this point, them showing up and seeing it for themselves isn't as important as them needing to fix it. And they're not fixing it. Biden obviously wanted to flee the scene, and he did over the weekend. Went to the beach, another vacation. Now, in fairness, August historically is the time for vacations in Washington, except we're not in August anymore. We're in September. In fairness, the House was out of session, but they're coming back today, and Biden is coming in, hanging up his jacket, and then going to New York to hang out with the UN. Over the weekend, Kristen Sinema scuttled Joe Biden's plans for getting reconciliation passed. I've got some more details on that when we come back. But I just, one more moment, please, on this Afghanistan situation. It is, well, let me let Martha Raddatz. Martha Raddatz of ABC News, not exactly friendly to conservatives.
I am now convinced that as many as 10 civilians, including up to 7 children, were tragically killed in that strike. It is unlikely that the vehicle and those who died were associated with ISIS-K or were a direct threat to U.S. forces. This strike was taken in the earnest belief that it would prevent an imminent threat to our forces and the evacuees at the airport. But it was a mistake, and I offer my sincere apology.
That stunning admission from the Pentagon that a drone strike in Kabul amid the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan killed 10 civilians with no connection to ISIS-K. It comes with the Pentagon already reeling from the revelation that Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley privately conferred with his Chinese counterpart to avert conflict in the final months of the Trump administration.
Yep, not a good look for the military, not a good look for Joe Biden. Here's Jake Tapper on CNN.
Speaking to allies, dealing with allies, the United States said it expected would come back, and they now understand that it will not. The idea that both the U.S. ambassador to France and, the French ambassador to the U.S. and the French ambassador to Australia will be recalled, I think is a sign of just how badly Europeans have taken this.
President Biden was elected promising to restore these alliances, seems to be not living up to that.
Yeah, not living up to that. Now, that story, that's actually France has interests in the Pacific. They're aligning more and more with Russians on interests in the Pacific, but who also contain China. The French, though, were going to sell used diesel submarines to Australia. Instead, we've got a super very best friends alliance formed with the U.S., U.K., and Australia. And it is to contain China's military ambitions in the Pacific. We're going to sell Australia nuclear-powered submarines that are very, very quiet. They're brand new. The French were going to give them used diesel. We're giving them brand new nuclear. They're quiet. The French are mad as all get out because they wanted to get those diesel submarines off their hands. They suckered the Aussies to take them, and now the Aussies have better. And they're mad about it because they lost out on the sale, and they're recalling their ambassador. But here's the thing. If Donald Trump were president and France was recalling its ambassadors and taking action against us, how do you think the media would cover this? How do you think the media would cover this? Joe Biden himself made this bed and now he's got to lay down in it. And the media is treating it with the passive voice. Biden was dealt problems. No, he wasn't dealt problems. He caused the problems And now he's having to actually live with the consequences of his own actions. And the media and Joe Biden don't like it because they see the polling and they know it helps Republicans. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. Well, the phone number, if you want to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I don't know if you know this or not, but there was a January 6th rally in Washington this weekend. I got to be honest with you. I didn't know this thing was happening until on Thursday or Friday. There was some sort of hysterical press coverage about it happening, and they were talking about the fence going up around the Capitol. I had no idea. I know people who went to Washington for the rally on January 6th, and not a single one of them was interested or knew anything about this rally this weekend, but the press knew all about it and gave it maximum exposure. The whole thing was dumb. It really genuinely was a dumb thing. I can't understand why the media thought it was a good idea to make it into something. It wasn't worth being made into. It wasn't a big deal. And less than 100 people ultimately showed up for it. In fact, there were as many, if not more, reporters there than there were actual people coming to the rally. I mean, and you know, it was one of those things where the media got to nutpick. Now, what do I mean by nutpick? The media got to take a story that really wasn't a story and turn it into a big story and claim monumental importance and allow the crazies who showed up voice and essentially pick the nuts to go on TV and represent the 74 million people who voted for Donald Trump. And there were less than 100 people there. There were more federal agents there. In fact, I'm not making this up. This really happened. A guy was detained by the police for carrying a gun. Turned out he was an undercover agent. Brian Stelter on CNN had this tweet. Even though it was a dud, small crowd at Capitol protest is still the lead story on Sunday's Washington Post front page. Why? Because, as the story lead says, it was the most anticipated visit by right-wing activists to the nation's capital since a mob stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. It was the most anticipated visit by right-wing activists for whom exactly? Who was anticipating? Clearly, no one on the right was anticipating it. Clearly, no one on the left or on the right really cared. And yet, for some people, apparently, it was a monumentally really big deal. Yeah, the people in the media who wanted the opportunity to portray everyone terribly. That's what was going on here. That's it. And the media ran with it. The federal agents covered the place. There were way more federal agents and police in SWAT uniforms and riot gear than there were people who actually showed up. It got disproportionate coverage on CNN. MSNBC covered it. CNN covered it. The national media covered it. And then they attacked Fox News for not covering it, where Fox was covering the Gabby Petito story. We're going to cover the Gabby Petito story when we come back. But the media attacked Fox News for covering the story of a missing girl and not covering a right-wing rally that no right-winger showed up to and all the media showed up to. Tells you everything you need to know about the media in Washington. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I did send out a recipe. If you didn't get that recipe, you can go to ewerickson.com. There's a recipe tab. It's a grilled pork loin. You can always call the show as well, 877-973-7425. I want to talk about the Gabby Petito situation for a moment. This is one of those interesting times where you're mindful that there are news stories that happen and circulate and are of a genre that you don't particularly pay attention to. This is one of them. It started with my 16-year-old asking me about it. Now, my 16-year-old, I'm trying to tell her repeatedly that she spends too much time trying to read the news and keep up on the headlines. She wants to be in the know. all of her friends, given what I do for a living, think that she knows everything. And so she stays up on the news, and she shouldn't, because it overwhelms her in ways a 16-year-old doesn't need to be overwhelmed by headlines and worries around the world that she can't fix. She wants to solve everybody's problems, and she can't. She's getting herself overwhelmed. And I wish she would delete the Apple News app from her phone altogether. And at some point, push comes to shove, I may force the issue. It's not healthy for the mental well-being of a teenager to be overwhelmed with the problems of the world. But she was interested in this Gabby Petito situation and wanted to know if I knew anything about it, and I assumed it was just her. So did my wife. And then my wife goes to the gym, and a 20-something at her gym is also obsessed with the Gabby Petito situation. And then I get on Instagram and have a lot of people who are reaching out about, am I going to talk about the border? Am I going to talk about the situation with the Haitians under the bridge? And they're all my age and older. And all the people who are 30 and younger are all about, are you going to talk about Gabby Petito? It is not just an age issue. There's something else going on here as well. Let me give you the basics if you don't know what the story is. Gabby Petito is a social media influencer. She's got 800,000 Instagram followers. I've only got 15,600. You should follow me, EW Erickson. She's got 800,000 followers on Instagram. I don't know how many she had before she disappeared. I'm sure a lot of people went in and decided to follow her account, but she had hundreds of thousands. She and her boyfriend slash fiance, who was apparently a bit of a survivalist, got in a van and decided to chronicle their travels to the West Coast, touring national parks, Glacier National Park, Mount Zion National Park, Yellowstone National Park. Along the way, she went missing, and he turned up back at home in Florida with his parents. He was there and then went off to a reserve, a nature reserve, and his parents finally told the police he had been missing for 3 days. His parents are not people of interest. He is. Now, oddly enough, a YouTuber, they couldn't find her body. They were searching. There was a manhunt searching for her body. A YouTuber happened to be scrolling through footage that the YouTuber had recorded, editing footage of his time, I think at Yellowstone, and happened to see the van on the video. He had recorded himself driving past their van and was able to geolocate where the van would have been at the time and told police, and the police were able to find Gabby Petito's body not far from where that van was. At one point, a relative had a text message show up that said no cell service in Yellowstone or some such, which, you know, when you fall out of service in areas, you don't auto-generate a text message to everyone saying, hey, I can't be reached. So something obviously happened. This girl, young, attractive, 20-something social media influencer with hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers, now dead. It appears her body has been found. Her boyfriend, a person of interest, has fled, it appears. Not just missing, as reports are, but actually fled, it appears. More notably, there is a huge divide between people in their 30s and up and 20s and younger who are focused on this story. It is a tragedy, but these tragedies happen all the time. There was, I should also note, apparently a domestic abuse incident along the way. Police were called. They didn't press charges against each other. There have been allegations stemming from people who have followed this girl for a while that her boyfriend was controlling, manipulative, or abusive, some such. So now there are a lot of points to be made here. First of all, is this divide? Charlie, my producer, is like, why are we even covering the story? Who is this? Well, a social media influencer in her 20s, who's been murdered now, apparently, by her boyfriend, presumed, we don't know, who is himself now fled. If you go on social media and look at this, there are a lot of people say, well, if he was black, they wouldn't have allowed him to flee. There are other people saying, I can't believe that it took the government so long to arrest him, detain him. They tried to speak to him through his lawyer before he fled. He clearly had information. He wasn't giving it to people. But then there's another angle to the story. I think you gotta consider this angle here. Why do you care? Why do you care? This happens all the time. If she wasn't a young, attractive, blonde social media influencer with a large following, the media wouldn't be covering it. She's not really even a celebrity. I don't think she had a verified account. She's not really a celebrity. She has a following of Gen Z people on the internet, some younger millennials. The media is covering it because it's a young, blonde social media influencer, presumably killed by her boyfriend, who has fled the scene, and the media can use this story because they know it's young people who care about it, and they're trying to build a business. The media does not care about Gabby Petito. They care that young people care about Gabby Petito, and they want those eyeballs on their stories. The New York Times is running a, who is Gabby Petito? You read the story, you got no freaking clue who she is, but the title is, who is Gabby Petito? So people who are Googling can go through and get the traffic. Send them traffic, send them clickbait. That's the whole thing here, is the media sees these stories and they can blow these stories up to capture the attention of a segment of the population that they care about. It's called the demo. Advertisers care about people 25 to 54. They particularly care about women, and they particularly care about the 25 to 30-year-old segment. Why? Because the 25 to 30-year-old segment of people out there have no money to spend. But advertisers are convinced if they can convince these people to develop brand loyalty in their late 20s, when they do have money, they will start buying the goods when they're the 35 to 45-year-olds that have the most money to spend, and they will stay brand loyal for the rest of their lives. So if you're a TV news outlet, you carry coverage nonstop of Gabby Petito missing, not because you care about her, not because you want justice, not because you want her boyfriend found and sent to jail, but because you want the eyeballs of the 20-something who cares about Gabby Petito. It's crass marketing. There are the people who obsess about this stuff. There are the true crime people. They'll tune into Nancy Grace, I guess. But this is all about getting the eyeballs of a valuable segment of the demo for news outlets and to generate clicks of people who are curious or the people who care passionately and want the traffic. But there's another side of this as well. When you follow someone on a medium like Instagram or TikTok or even YouTube, a lot of people begin to think they know this person. It no longer surprises me when I encounter people who follow me on social media and they act like they know everything about my life. People who consider me friends and we've never met in person. And to be fair, there are people I followed for a long time on social media who I feel like I know this person, like I'm friends with this person. We've never met except on Instagram. We've direct messaged repeatedly, and therefore, yes, I know this person. Yes, I'm acquainted with this person. A lot of people never use the word acquaintance. They just go straight to this person's a friend because I know them on the internet. They sent me a DM once. They must be a friend. People relate to people on intimate medium like Snapchat, Instagram, TikTok in ways they don't when it's just a Twitter follower or it's someone on Facebook. But when it's a medium where you expose yourself, however curated it is, however fake it is, you present yourself in such a way that other people begin to feel like they have a relationship with you. And it becomes an emotional connection. In a postmodern world, emotional relational connections matter more than most. And people are able to develop those on social media. It's one reason radio is not going away, by the way. Even the major radio overlords, the major corporations that own radio companies, they're convinced talk radio is dying. And it's not really dying, and it's not going to die for the very reason that we're in a postmodern era and people develop emotional relational connections to people. And you develop an emotional relational connection to me based on my voice, which is a more intimate way of connecting to someone than even facial expressions. the number of people who listen to me and say they'll never listen to me again because I made them mad in our relationship, and yet they keep coming back. And that's not to mock them or pick on them. It's a relation. It is a tangible relationship. I went to dinner on Friday night, went into a coffee shop. There's a little coffee shop up in Roswell, Georgia called Crazy Love. It's named after Francis Chan's great book. And there were a group of people in there, a large group of people. They all recognized me. They all knew who I was, that they knew I had to be going to Table in Maine, my favorite restaurant, because they listen to me. They know me because they listen to the show, and I try to be as relational and transparent as possible. I went to the restaurant. Multiple people there knew who I was. They weren't surprised to see me. They were all very nice. So you take someone like Gabby Petito. She's got a multi-hundred-thousand person following on social media of young people. It's an intimate relationship because she shares details of her life and her travel. People are rooting for her. They care for her. And they're in that age group that the demo says is the most needed for advertisers. So the media is going to gravitate towards the story. They're going to run headlines about it. They're going to run, who is she? They're going to run, who is her boyfriend? I think Brian Laundry is his name, something like that. And they're going to run these stories to try to capture the minds and attention of young people, hoping to convert them into regular users of the news. And so you and I should be, we should all be, everyone listening should be a little bit disgusted that the media is using the story, not because they care about a dead girl, but because they care about trying to convert the people who do care about her into consumers of their products, news and otherwise. And so crassly, they will make this as salacious as possible to drive up the interest and hope to build a relationship with the media outlet or an addiction to the news source. But the other thing that we should care about here is Gabby Petito. A young girl who is dead, most likely because of her boyfriend, who had a life in front of her that she will now not live. And this is old fuddy-duddy me coming out, I realize. But there does seem to have been, based on what I have read and based on the comments of a lot of people who did follow and care about this girl, who feel like they built a relationship with her on social media, that her boyfriend wasn't the greatest person. And if these people who followed her online knew, did her parents know? And if they knew, if her, I think her mom was divorced and remarried, or I don't know where her real dad is in the story. But if the people who followed her on social media had a sense of this, did they? And if they did they not say, hey, maybe you shouldn't be going off somewhere with this guy in a van by yourselves? You're not married. Maybe you shouldn't do that. There are a lot of people who care about this girl. I don't know who she is. I wouldn't know about the story, but for my daughter, knowing a lot of the details about the story and realizing this is one of those stories where there is a generational divide. Gen Z cares about the story because they are the most online, the most likely to feel like they've built a connection with someone who is a social media influencer online. You see where the world is heading on this. You see the crassness of the major mainstream media institutions running with the story, not because they care about this girl, but because they care about getting the attention of the people who care about the girl. And all of that then should actually be overshadowed by the fact that there is a young girl, a social media influencer, who is dead. And what signs were there that maybe she shouldn't have gone off on this trip? And did anyone care enough to tell her maybe it wasn't a good idea? And that's the sad tragedy here, is could this have been avoidable? And you know what the other sad, real, true, striking tragedy of this is? Is that this happens all the time. But the people it happens to are not young, blonde, attractive social media influencers who have a fan base to care. And so we'll never know the names of those people. And yet it still happens all the time. And it's going to keep happening. And maybe if we can use this situation with this young lady and drive more awareness of these situations, maybe a future situation can be avoided. can be deterred, and parents can be thinking, is there anything I can do? Is there anything I should say to try to not have my child wind up in the situation? And you should right now probably be praying for her family. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Can I just a question, if you will, an impolite question. Some friends will be mad at me making. Nonetheless, I think it's probably a question that needs to be asked anyway. Where are the evangelicals for Joe Biden? I was told that we needed Joe Biden because Joe Biden would be a better representative missionary for Christ than Donald Trump. And every time there was a border crisis during Donald Trump's presidency, these people would come out and demand action, demand compassion, demand we let them in, demand we do something, demand we take action, demand we fix the situation, demand we resolve the humanitarian force. Where are these people now? Where are they as Joe Biden goes after Texas for a reasonable pro-life piece of legislation? Where are they as Joe Biden demands that the transgender agenda be imposed on public schools? Where are they with the humanitarian crisis in Texas as 15,000 or so people are under a bridge in Texas in the heat? They found dead women, one of whom was pregnant with twins in her womb in the desert. They found another dead body decomposed with a bullet in its head, in his head, who had crossed over from Mexico. They have found children wandering in the desert. Where's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? She went down when Donald Trump was there. Remember the drinking out of toilets episode? And that the kids in cages and there were concentration camps? Where is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? Where are the evangelicals for Biden? Where are they? If everyone who supported Donald Trump is supposed to repent, when are these people going to repent? Because they got a political outcome they like that is giving them the same results they hated when Donald Trump was there? Is it because Joe Biden cares about the kids in cages? Even though they're still in cages, Joe Biden cares about the people starving under the bridge in Texas, so it's him caring that matters. Where are the evangelicals for Biden, and when will they speak out about him, his ongoing crusade for abortion, ongoing crusade for transgender rights, ongoing collapse at the border? Where are they? Where is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez about the border? Are they the hypocrites they claimed everyone else was?